possible endings on them and so forth, too. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to really... Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen anybody put a figure down for all the possible forms. Yeah, somebody could catch it. Yeah. Yeah, just, they don't want to publish that information. Yeah, but even there, I mean, if you actually wanted to consider every conceivable form, he doesn't put down, I don't think in his chart he puts down all the forms of the participle, you know, with all of the masculine, feminine, neuter, and then your, you know, six forms under each one. So it would be interesting. Somebody could do that as a interesting sidelight. But don't publish information, please. At least not to beginning Greek students. I'm going to keep that a secret. But see, then there's the optative, too, you know, and we haven't even got to that. And that's not used very frequently. See, a lot of these forms just aren't used that much, but the theoretical possibilities for the number of forms would really be something else. Then if you really wanted to get technical, you could include periphrastic constructions, like using the form of the verb to be plus the participle, and get on another whole series of combinations there. Okay, plus all of your different infinitives and so forth that can occur. Well, we're in chapter 47 talking about the perfect and the pluperfect, and around page 289. And we've talked about this reduplicating syllable. It's the main feature we've been zeroing in on at this time. And five categories here of verbs that run into certain complications depending upon what kind of consonant begins the verb or whether it's a vowel or something as far as this reduplication is concerned. So we went through that yesterday. Now section 371 is a kind of a summary again and of how the forms are built. The perfect and pluperfect forms of regular verbs may be analyzed into constituent morphemes as follows. And this again is just for observational purposes, and when you start getting into combinations of these things, I think it might be easier just to memorize the form or just the ending system. But notice what's happening to them. First you have the base, and for example for Lu, of course just Lu. Prefixes, we have A, the reduplicating syllable as described above is prefixed to the base in all perfect and pluperfect forms. But of course that the actual form of the reduplicating syllable is going to be somewhat variable depending on the rules that we saw above. Then secondly, the augment, as described in section 95-95.1, is prefixed to the reduplicating syllable in pluperfect indicative forms. However, this augment is frequently omitted. And since there aren't very many pluperfect forms in the New Testament, it must be omitted enough that it is rather significant. So you'll see in the paradigm a little bit later on that they put it in parentheses. If you look at page 292 at the top there, you see the pluperfect forms. And they've got the augment there, but they got it in parentheses because it, sometimes you'll see it and sometimes you won't. Now, fortunately, it's not really critical to determining the form because the reduplicating syllable is going to tell you you're dealing with either perfect or pluperfect, and then the ending system is distinctive enough that you'll be able to tell your pluperfect from your perfect. So it's really not, and that may be part of the reason why, you know, just kind of rationalize a little bit, why they omit it sometimes, because you don't really need it to show that you've got a pluperfect form. Okay, so sometimes you'll see the augment on the pluperfect form, but not on the perfect form. So you won't see augments on the perfect. Even though the perfect is a past tense, it doesn't have the augment. That reduplicating syllable is giving you that information. But you will see it sometimes on pluperfect forms. Now, as far as the difference in meaning, we haven't got to that yet, but I think most of you have a rough idea of what the difference is, but we'll get into the details later on. Okay, the tense formant is another thing. The kappa that we saw added on to the base of the perfect is a tense formant, is added to the reduplicated verb base to form the perfect active base. Now, note, some verbs do not have this kappa in their perfect or pluperfect forms. And, for example, ge grapha for grapho. We've already seen grapho being a little bit unusual in that it takes a second aorist and so forth. In passive and aorist passive. But ge grapha, there's no kappa there. Of course, you can see a potential problem putting a kappa on a phi. Although that ge grapha probably wouldn't be too bad. It wouldn't be hard to pronounce. But they don't do it. And other verbs have shortened or lengthened forms of the verb base before it. So this is where some of your irregularities come in. Instead of having a kappa, or even when they have the kappa, sometimes they'll have a shortened base or a lengthened base. Lots of it is to avoid phonological problems. So you see baptica, for example, from baptizo, the zeta is gone from the base before that kappa goes on. So it's not bebaptizka, but bebaptica. And memathica from Montano, of course, that one we've already seen, the base gets some funny things happening to it. If you consider the base as moth, based on the second aorist, emathon, then even there, this one gets a lengthening, actually. The base was moth. If you consider moth as the base, then you have matheka, you get an eta on the base, and it lengthens a little bit. So, in other words, some things are going to be done here and there to change that. And it's usually not too bad if you've got the kappa there. If the, on the verbs where the kappa remains, even though there's been a base change or something, they're pretty good to easy to recognize. And most of your perfect forms, you'll either have the reduplicating syllable pretty clear or the kappa pretty clear. Although there are some that neither one of them is clear. Those are the hard ones to identify. Especially if you see the alpha in the end, it's easy to get them confused with aorist. So that's the thing to be watching for, I suppose. The most common error is likely to be having a perfect form that doesn't have the reduplicating syllable real clear because maybe it begins with a vowel or something, and that didn't get the kappa. Then if you see its form, for example, it's going to take those alpha-type bendings just like the aorist did, and you may not be able to tell that it's aorist. So you'll get caught on a few of those unless you just have to know the verb from vocabulary. We'll get into one of those a little bit later on. Okay, stem formatives. These are probably the hardest part. And this is part that I don't know if it's really worth trying to memorize the stem formative. It's better just to memorize the endings, because especially this first category is variable, either alpha or epsilon. So the alpha or epsilon is added to the perfect base to form the perfect active stem. The allomorph epsilon occurs only in the third person singular. So this one is all third place else, but just third person singular's got the epsilon. That's kind of like what we've seen with the aorist and so forth already. And then B, epsilon iota added to the perfect base to form the pluperfect active stem. And that one's real easy to identify. That epsilon iota is a thing to watch for in your pluperfect forms. If you'll notice, when we get later on to the endings, all of the endings have epsilon iota. That's the thematic vowels, diphthong all the way through. And that makes them nice to identify. Okay, then a remark. Neither tense formants nor stem formatives occur in the perfect and pluperfect middle and passive. So your middle and passive forms don't have stem formatives. There won't be the kappas there. There won't be the tense formants or the stem formatives. The perfect and middle passive base is thus identical with a perfect middle and passive stem and consists merely of the reduplicated verb base. So, in other words, they're kind of breaking things down, and all you have as far as your passive forms is just this reduplication. You do have the reduplication, but you don't have a kappa or you don't have those stem formative vowels added on. You just have endings stuck onto that base. And that will generate some complications, as you'll see. Because the ending system, most of those endings, if you don't have the stem formative there, you just have a consonant beginning the ending on most of them, all of them, I guess. And then that consonant is going to be added onto a base that may end in a consonant if there's no stem formative there. And you get consonant to consonant combinations, and you can kind of smell what's going to happen here. You'll see a little chart on page 291 that'll tell you what will happen. So this is only for the passives now, because they don't have these stem formatives. So then top of the next page, though, before we get that far, the suffixes that are added on in the indicative. Now you see categories here, primary A, primary B, secondary A, secondary B. Same kind of categories we've seen earlier. And these endings are actually almost the same as what we had before. There's some slight differences. Primary A, you start out with zero, then sigma, then nu, optional nu, then men, te, and C with optional nu. Primary B, mi, psi, tai, metha, the, and nu, tau, alpha, iota. Secondary A, just a nu, a sigma, zero, men, te, son. And secondary B, main, so, to, metha, the, and nu, tau, omicron. Now you should recognize at least the ending system. It's somewhat similar. I'm trying to find here the page that we had that before. It was back on our summary of verb forms chapter. Let me check. It was on 168 somewhere in that ballpark. It was a little bit earlier in there. Yeah, okay, that's the chapter I'm thinking about, I'm pretty sure. Yes, right. Page 134. Page 134. There you see the suffixes that we've used in the normal verb forms we've been dealing with before. You see your primary A, primary B, secondary A, secondary B. And if you compare these, primary A there had an omega, and then iota sigma, and then iota, and men, te, and usi. Some similarities there. There's a vowel involved in at least the first three of these where there wasn't in the perfect ones. The primary B, my, a, tai, methas, the, and nu, tau, alpha, iota, they're exactly the same except for your second person. The second person in the perfect has got psi, this has got eta. Other than that, they're the same.
And psi, was that what they called the old?
Yeah, right. That was the older, what they're apparently calling the older form. Huh? Yes, and then that same kind of sigma shows up in the me verbs. So you are seeing some parallels here. Okay, then the secondary A's, they're almost the same. In fact, the only difference there is you've got a new, the optional new, indicated for the third person and not, and just a zero for the perfect forms. And your secondary B, those are the same except for, again, the second person form. You've got ooh in the earlier forms we've been used to, and now we've got so, again, that sigma showing up. Other than that, they're the same. So that's just by matter of observation there. You can notice the similarities and differences. Going back here to page 290 then, primary A suffixes are added to the perfect active stem to form the perfect active indicative. So you may want to, in my book I just wrote above these, which they're used for. The primary A go in your perfect active forms, perfect active. The primary B go with the perfect middle and passive. Again, your middle and passive forms are the same. So your perfect middle and passive for your primary B. The secondary A go with the pluperfect active. Secondary A are pluperfect active, and secondary B would be the pluperfect middle and passive. Okay, your secondary B go on pluperfect middle and passive. So in other words, your primaries go on the perfect, your secondaries go on the pluperfect. The A's go on the active, the B's go on the middle and passives. Yes?
Noticing all those primary endings are like present tense, and all
secondary
endings are like almost like the imperfect.
Right, they're very much like the imperfect. And see, it's the same kind of ending system. Remember, when we did our analysis earlier, it was the primary A endings that went on the present and the secondary A that went on the imperfect. And there's just slight differences in the endings, but that's just, it's the same ending system. Okay. And your present middle and passive had something similar to the primary B, although there were some changes, you know, oh my, and so forth. Oh my A, eti, oh my S, on tie. See, that same system, except that the full ending system includes that stem formative. That's where you get your vowel in there. And they're trying to separate the vowel from the ending. See, a lot of books will just put your endings down. With, you know, they won't break it up into stem formative and ending. They'll just include the whole thing together. And I don't know, I guess that's kind of the way it seems easier to me to do it, just to memorize them that way. Sometimes you can get so many rules that you forget the rules. Okay, then the imperative, now going down for the indicative, these are the suffixes. Now part B here is the imperative. No perfect active imperative forms occur in the New Testament. So as far as active, you see, it's rather difficult to command a person to have done something. You see, it's almost too late. But you can get a passive, middle and passive form of a perfect. And you see several examples here. So you will find the imperative in the passive, commanding a person to be something, to be have something done to them. So be muzzled, for example, be muzzled. And the idea there is to come into a state of being whereby you have been muzzled. And so you can get that passive idea in there and also that past idea. We'll get in a little bit more detail as to what the perfect is signifying here. But it's translated be muzzled and perimoso. Or eroso means be strong or farewell, which is kind of a greeting. In other words, be strong. That's what they're encouraging people to do when they're saying goodbye and so forth. Eros de, be strong or farewell again. That's the second. That's using the plural. So we have a, we do find a few places where the perfect middle and passive will occur in the imperative. Yes. Well, he says the first of these forms is from phimoo. It's a contract verb also. So this pephimoso comes from that. Yeah, and the other one is ronumai. Yeah, it's kind of an unusual. And of course, it gets. He's just giving you the forms here because they're rare, and he doesn't want to give you a full paradigm form because they don't occur. It's not worth learning a paradigm. So those are the forms.
And,
let's see. The following middle and passive forms occur. That's apparently the case. These may not be the only places they occur, but these are the only forms that occur. Okay, so we really don't need to worry about that except for these particular forms here. The subjunctive, no perfect subjunctive form occurs in the New Testament. Where necessary, its place is taken by a perfect participle plus a subjunctive form of ame. Okay, so this is what we call a periphrastic construction, where instead of using the verb form, they use a participle plus a verb ame. And then you can, with the verb ame, you can put that in the subjunctive and then just use the participle to get the rest of the idea completed. So that's what they do in this case. So you don't have to worry about subjunctive for the perfect forms then. There will be perfect participles though, as you'll see. Okay, then for infinitives, it's not too difficult. For the infinitives, you add ni, is added to the perfect base to form the perfect active infinitive. So lelu kenai, yegraphenai, pepoe kenai. Just add the ni on, onto the base, and you have it. Then sthai is added to the perfect middle and passive base to form the perfect middle and passive infinitive. So lelu sthai, pepoe sthai, etc. So just add ni or sthai, depending on what is active or passive, middle or passive. And that's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Then participles, this isn't too bad either. Participles, you add os, uia, and os added to the perfect active base to form the perfect active participle. So again, lelukos, lelukuia, lelukos are your forms. And your genitive singular form to show the full paradigm, lelukotos, lelukuias, and lelukotos. Dative plural, lelukosi, lelukuiais, and lelukosi. So as you see, it's your standard third declension forms for your masculine and neuter, and first declension alpha type forms for your feminines. Yes? Oh, it's otos. Okay. Yeah, you have to watch. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Those two types are pretty similar, the new tau types and the tau types, but you can't tell from the nominative form which it's going to be. So that's why they give you the genitive here. Yeah, that's a good point. So watch for that, because your present participles use the new tau type, and this one just uses the tau type. Other than that, it's the same, though. The ending system is the same. Good. Okay, then you have your menos, mene, menon. Those are pretty familiar, too, for your passive type. So this would be for your perfect passive participles. This is added to the perfect middle and passive base to form the perfect middle and passive participle. And so you get leluminos and pepoemonos, etc. So that shouldn't present any real complications, although your main feature there to determine that that's a perfect middle and passive participle is that reduplicating syllable. Okay, now we have a remark here, and this is a kind of a nasty complication that occurs. Yes. It says, if the perfect middle and passive stem or base of a verb ends in a consonant, this consonant and the initial consonant of the following suffix combine as indicated in the table below. Remember, our problem was this. They didn't use a stem formative for the passive endings, which means there's no vowel that's kind of bridging the gap. And see, if you've got that little vowel in there, then it doesn't matter so much what the base ends in. If it ends in a consonant, you've got a vowel in between that consonant and the next consonant of the ending. But for these perfect forms, these middle and passive forms, and pluperfect, you have the problem of adding an ending that begins, and all of them begin with consonants, my, psi, tai, metha, ste, and nu, tau, alpha, iota. And you're adding that onto a base that potentially ends in a vowel, in a consonant also. Not all bases are going to end in a consonant, but a lot of them are. Remember, you don't have a kappa now here, and you don't have the stem formative vowel. So whatever that base ended in, that's it, and then you're sticking this on. And so complications arise, and that is requiring another little table here. And I don't think I'm going to require you to memorize this. I think for the quiz, I'm just going to give you Luo or something, and you don't have to worry so much about it. But this is what will happen. And you just have to, I guess my main caution is keep on the lookout for some of these forms. And if you see a verb form, just know that this does happen. And I think if you know that it happens, you probably won't have too much trouble when you run into one. But again, it's our same categories of vowel or consonants that give us the trouble. Notice that the P, beta, and phi, and you've got your labials, you've got your velars and dentals. You know, the velars, kappa, gamma, phi, and then your dentals, tau, delta, and theta. Then you got your liquid, you know, the lambda, rho, and then the nasal, nun there, and nu there. And look what happens here. We've got four. Now, this chart is set up this way. Across the top, you see a mu, sigma, tau, and sigma, theta. Those are the beginning letters of the primary B suffixes. See, my, psi, tai, metha, the. And then the nu, tau, alpha, iota is missing. You'll see why in a little bit. Okay. And then if the base then ends in a P, for example, and then your ending is suppose you want to put my on it, you're going to get two mu's together. If the base ended in a beta, same thing. If the base ended, say, in a lambda, then in your ending started with, say, a sigma theta, the result would be a lambda theta. You know, you just read across the chart and find it. So this is a little complicated. Now, it says, note this table does not provide for combinations of consonants with nu tau. For example, nu tau alpha iota and nu tau omicron. Because the forms in which such combinations would have been replaced in Hellenistic Greek by periphrastic expressions. In other words, they didn't even want to deal with this. So instead of that, they used a periphrastic expression, and what they actually used was, again, the verb to be plus a participle. And if you look at the paradigm on the next page, you'll see that. Taking a look at page 292, look at your pluperfect, just the perfect, I guess, we'll look at, the perfect middle and passive, your second section here. And you won't see it on Luo because that one's okay. Just ending in a vowel. But if it ended in a consonant, like grapho, look at that. If you look down at the last form there, the third person plural, instead of trying to put an ending on the stem for grapho, they have gegramenoi asin. Using a third person plural nominative form of the participle, of course that form would change depending on the context. And then asin would be the form of the verb to be. So that's the way they're expressing it. So the idea there literally would be something like they are in the state of having been written, or something like that. They are. So we would translate it: they are written, or were written.
So you always see these two together.
Right. You'll see the always. If that form ever comes up, it'll always be this. It'll be a participle plus the verb to be. Now it won't necessarily be. You could have asin first and then. In other words, the word order could change a little bit. And conceivably, there might even be other words coming in between, but the construction would be participle plus the verb to be.
Well, you say they were trying to avoid what?
Well, they're trying to avoid having to add a new tau onto the base that ended with the phi. In other words, we have a base ending in a consonant, and they have this chart that covers all of the endings except for the last one, the new tau alpha iota. See, if you look at the top on that little chart there, you've got mu, sigma, tau, and sigma, theta. That covers all five endings except for the nu, tau, alpha, iota. And apparently they didn't like to try to add a nu, tau onto anything. And so they just avoided it by using the verb to be plus participle. And it must not occur very often, you know, but apparently they just didn't want to do it. Yeah, isn't it something? Now, I don't know if it had been me, I'd probably just forgotten this whole ending system and just used the verb to be and participle all the way through. I mean, you could just easily do it for all the rest of the forms, but that's not the way the language turned out. So this is what we have to be contending with here. So actually, this form doesn't really belong in the paradigm so much. I mean, it's not really following your paradigm structure. But that's what they'll stick in when that form would have come into being. Okay. So this is only the third person plural form now that gets affected. Yes, Greg.
I noticed that they didn't use the negative up there on the chart.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought they would use it with the tau and the delta and the theta.
Yeah.
But is there? Should that be there?
No, I don't think so. The baptizo probably was one. I think what they're doing there is that these are the ones that are consistent all the time, and the other ones you may see them both ways. In other words, with zeta, perhaps there may be some verbs that are regular and drop them off, get that shorter base like baptizo, but there may be others that go ahead and, you know, just have maybe going to double sigma baptisi, I would guess, just using your ordinary phonological things. Since it's not in the chart, either the problem never comes up because they always just drop it off, or see, if they drop it off, then you don't have any consonant combination anymore to worry about, and that's probably what happens on the basis of baptizo. There are lots of verbs that have the zeta, you know, ending. So I would assume that we can take baptizo as the example on that, and assume that the zeta is just dropping off. But it might have been nice to include that. Huh?
First one down there, we got an example of that.
291, okay. Yeah, he does. Okay, this one does. Yeah, Bob Tidd gets a delta there. Okay, in general, the final consonant of the verb base, as C-section 90 appears, as this appears when the final omega of the first principal part is dropped. The verb base cannot, however, be found in this way. Thus, the base of Bob Tizzo is Bob Tidd, and the base of Caruso is Keruk. Okay, so that's probably what's going to be. The way they define the rule is you find the verb base first, and having found the verb base, then if it ends in one of these consonants, then you apply these rules. But yeah, right, that's why you have to know the principal part. So that's how they're defining, that's how they're kind of weaseling this chart down, not having to deal with all of it. You have to know the verb base first, and those other complications apparently taken care of in the verb base. In other words, verbs that ended up with combinations they didn't like, they just changed them, either you got a delta, or you got a, you know, got something else, dropped it off, you know, any number of possibilities. Okay. So, bottom line is that chart in the back and the principal parts.
How about like with the verb pasta original?
Mm-hmm.
And would that have a delta there instead of the same?
Presumably. But here it says the base is with a delta. So, yes, if your base has got a delta, then it's going to fit into one of these categories here. It'll fit into that third line. So if suppose katharizo, for example, would be, if you wanted to have, it'd be katharismai for your form there, for, you know, sigma. In other words, the delta would change to sigma according to this chart. So in other words, once you find out what that base is, now of course it's going to be a little tricky to know really what the base was. For example, Bob Tidzo, if you look it up in the back there, you'll see the principal part, and you might, if you see the form, for example, it would give you baptismi. Deduce from that something's happened there, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to predict exactly. It could have been a delta, tau, or theta. All three of those would have given you baptismi. So that's the same problem we've run into before. You kind of have to, sometimes you're going to have to do, to trace some of these words, you're going to have to get your analyticals out and that type of thing and try to find out for sure which one it is of several possibilities. Okay. Trying to find an idzo verb back here just to see an example. I guess we've got enough information there. to do it.
There's another Caparizzo.
Yeah.
That one's there, but it doesn't have a perfect active.
Yeah.
It's
got the middle and passive, so you can see the sigma, you know, kekatharismai. You can see that in the middle and passive. That's the one that we're worried about anyway.
El-Pizzo is El-Pizza and El-Pizza.
Mm-hmm. And then there's no middle and passive. Yeah. And there's a problem again. Your reduplication doesn't work because the verb begins with the epsilon. So you just get an eta there.
There is no on the last page of the perfect middle half of the epsirigma. So there you get a
yes. Yeah. See, that one had a different base then. So, yeah. That's the problem. You can't always tell what the base is going to be. Looks like it's getting steric, so you see in the future. That's pretty predictable, hysterics. But then it's hysterigmai. And you get the gamma. So, makes for lots of fun.
There's no way that Mike can know what the base would be on either team that.
No, there isn't any way for sure to you see, because even if you come up with a general rule that works most of the time, you probably have some oddballs that just do irregular things anyway. So that's why he set up this rule, is to, you've got to know the base first, and whatever happens to the base happens to the base, you know. I mean, it's just those are, you know, certain categories of verbs are probably going to fall into certain, you know, general categories, but you can't always predict it. So like these idzo verbs, it looks like they're doing different things. If sterigmai is doing a different thing than sterizo is doing a different thing than baptizo, for example, did. So you're getting igmai there instead of ismai, which is, how do you know how to predict that? You just don't. That's why that chart's back there. Okay, and we will get a chance to go through that chart here before too long. I'm going to give you some, this will be for vocab quizzes. We'll just have you learn these principal parts. I won't be having you make all the verb forms on them, but we'll take them in sections, about 10 at a time or so, and have a quiz. 10 at a time, something like that. Well, let's see, maybe 10, 15, something like that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. About 14 or so, I think, at a time. That's not too bad. Okay, but that'll come in due time here. All right, illustrative paradigms, section 372, putting all this together. For Luo, then we have for the first person singular, Leluka. Now we're talking about the perfect active now. Leluka, Lelukas, Leluke, with optional nu, Lelukamen, Lelukate, and Lelukasi. So you're ending, combining that stem formative, which is mostly alpha here, with the ending. You can see that the ending itself, from the kappa on, is just like your aorist forms. Your regular old average run-of-the-mill first aorist active form.
Plural, third person.
Oh, let's see.
That would be on.
That's right. Well, we got one exception there. But you got the thematic alpha. Yeah, you got the osi there, a fuller, longer form. And this, again, these probably were, you know, one's a shorter form than the other, perhaps. But watch for that one. You might circle that to denote it, remember it. The rest of them are all the same. And your third person has got that epsilon, the optional nu, just like your aorist had. And then your reduplicating syllable, of course, is going to be important. Then the kappa. Now your grapho is, you know, unusual in that it doesn't have the kappa. So gegrapha, gegraphas, gegraphen, gegraphamen, gegraphata, gegraphasi, and then you've got the asi ending down there. Tasso, it's got a double sigma there, so you can expect something strange is going to happen. You know, you can't really add a kappa to a double sigma. So who knows what's going to happen? Well, it turns out to be a chi in this case. And again, you're not going to be able to come up with a slick rule for covering all of these. They don't even give you a chart for this one. So, but you'll learn this by the principal part. So tetacha, tetachas, etc. You get the reduplication just fine, but it's a chi there before your ending system. And the ending system is fine. Question? I forgot now. Well, I guess I don't. Somebody had to check it and look it up. I don't know. He doesn't have a dictionary here, but I'd probably recognize it if I saw it again. It's not
talks the ball.
Yeah, it talks the ball. I don't say it doesn't mean to drink. It seems like it has something to do. Maybe somebody check it for curiosity. Does it grab a lexicon back there to see? Because it is sometimes, it's good to write those meanings in your book if you're questioned about it. There's nothing more frustrating than learning the paradigm of a verb, you know, and not know what it means. No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's probably too regular. it's probably not used very often. This list in the back tends to use the most common ones that'll give you any trouble. The most common irregular ones is what that is.
Appointed.
Ordained,
determined.
Hmm. Okay.
Used on their way.
Okay. No wonder. Okay. Appointed or determined.
Determined.
Any common? Right. There might be some combination forms of that, too, with prepositions that I want to look up. Okay, then on the next page, your pluperfect active of these three verbs. You notice you've got the epsilon in parentheses. That's an option. And then your ending system is pretty straightforward. You get the epsilon iota, and that's thematic all the way through in every form. So elelucain, elelucase, elelucae, elelucamen, elelucata, and elelucasan. So that's pretty reasonable. And your pluperfect active, again, graphane, again, we don't have the kappa, but we have the epsilon iota ending system all the way through. And then for tasso, etetakane, etc., and the ending system the same. So pluperfect is pretty nice as far as its endings. Perfect middle and passive, this is where the problems come. For luo, it's no problem because we've got the vowel ending, so the base. So lelumai, lelusai, lelutai, lelumata, leluste, leluntai. Notice your accent is following the same basic principle we've seen before where you get the recessive accent. So it's getting as far front as possible. Now, your perfect middle and passive for grapho, there's where you come into problems. And so it's geg gramai, geg grapsai, geg graptai, geg gramatha with two mu's, geg grapthe, and geg gramenoi asin. Okay, so quite an interesting paradigm there. But you can see it's because of these phonological changes. In each one of these forms is a little bit different in that respect. First one, you're just adding mu to it. Next one, you're adding a sigma to it. Next one, you're adding a tau to it. And the next one was the mu again, then the sigma theta you're adding to it. So you get various combinations according to that chart that you saw earlier. And then tasso, same thing. Tetagmai, tetaksai, tetaktai, tetagmetha, and tetakthe, and tetagmenoi asin. Tagmenoi asin. Okay, pluperfect middle and passive. Again, just a different ending system. As far as luo is concerned, very simple and straightforward. Optional augment, elelumain, eleluso, eleluto, elelumetha, etc. Yes.
It may
or may not appear.
In luo, like it can be or
yeah.
It doesn't have to be either one.
No, it doesn't have to be either one. In other words, what it's really saying is that in the text of the New Testament, you'll find it both ways. Sometimes you'll find it with the augment, sometimes you'll find it without.
You think maybe because of the
that's a consideration, you know, of whether they would use it or not may depend upon the sound and the flow and the meter and that type of thing. That's a possibility. It's also a possibility that it starts, you know, that we're looking at a transition period where maybe earlier it was used all the time and then it was starting to drift away. They were starting to shorten things, just abbreviate more, cut out one syllable, and getting away with it because the ending system was so definitive that you would never run into a problem confusing this with, say, a present form or something like that. So I don't know for sure on that. You'd have to kind of check the classical Greek too and see what the situation was there, if they were doing it, both doing it and not doing it. And I would suspect that if they were, even there in classical Greek, then the reason probably would lie in the meter type of thing, would lie in the sound. Okay, well, the middle and passive forms, same ending consonant combination, so we don't need to really read through those again, as the same ones you saw with the perfect middle and passive above. Now, perfect active infinitive, lelukenai and gegraphenai, tetrachenai, that's real easy. Just add the ni onto the base. Perfect active participle, as we've seen, lelukos, lelukia, lelukos, and noting that it's not ontos but otos type. And gegraphos, same situation there. Perfect middle passive infinitive, lelustai. Excuse me, just adding stai onto the end. And then gegraphtai and tetachtai. On those, the sigma is dropping out. So I don't know if you made any mention of that or not. I guess he really didn't, but that's what happens.
Who's seen it?
Huh? Yeah, you could. You could, you know, that's the same thing that's happened before. This is an infinitive, so we may not be able to, we may not want you to be using that chart, but it's the same thing. We've seen this kind of thing before with the sigma, so I guess there's no real problem on that. You could use the chart and still get by, but it's just, yeah. Okay, perfect middle passive participle, aluminos, etc. And then the remark one, in the perfect and pluperfect forms of compound verbs. Now the question comes, what do you do with compound verbs? Because remember, the compound verb had this prepositional prefix. And what happens is basically what happened before. It's the augment, if present, and the reduplicating syllable follow all other prefixes. So in other words, you still you think of it maybe as pulling that prefix off, the preposition off, making it into a perfect form and sticking it back on. And in other words, you're getting your reduplicating syllable. You're not going to get the reduplication out in front, but you're going to keep that prepositional idea as it were separate from the main verb idea. And so apoluo, for example, becomes apoleluka. So again, you can see from the perfect form, if you just chop the apo off, you can see leluka, and you can see what you're dealing with as far as your base. So the same thing happens. Pluperfect, apalelukane. So that's what's going to take place there. Now, notice that you've got the augment in that form, in the pluperfect. You're using the augment in this one, apalelukane, instead of apo. So the same thing happens with your augment. The augment is going to, and of course, sometimes that's going to change the last vowel of that preposition. Was it? Yes, Glenn?
A couple of questions. Do they have no pluperfect infinitives or participles?
Apparently not. You know, you wouldn't think that there's a problem. He doesn't mention them here. I would be very surprised. Pluperfect just doesn't occur very often, period. And sure looks like they're not bothering with those. I the only way to find out for sure is to just check with them. I could check Robertson again just to see, but it certainly looks like there aren't any. Well,
formation seems to be going on.
Yeah, the pluperfect is kind of I kind of have to hold off and get the idea of the meaning. But
without regard to the meaning, but
yeah.
In
terms of forms.
There's no pluperfect participles.
Yes. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. You don't really need them. You see, in actual practice, your aorist participle would pretty much take care of anything that's pluperfect, just because of the way they use aorist. And you'll see that a little bit later on here. But the perfects are pretty common forms. What the perfect is emphasizing is an action took place in the past with a continuing result. The pluperfect gets a little. It takes you a step further remote. It's saying an action happened in the past with a then continuing result, and you get kind of shoved away from it quite a ways. And when you start doing that, the aorist, because it's got that indefinite idea, you know, the action was done. We really don't care that much now exactly all the details of it. It seems like the aorist really comes in as far as participles in situations like that. But there are the pluperfect forms do occur. They're not real common, but they do occur. But you'll see when we look at the end here in the meanings, perhaps some of the reason why that is as it is. They're just not real commonly used. And many times in English, where we would might use a pluperfect form, he had done this or something, the Greek will just use an aorist for it. And so. Something we need to keep in mind. Now, there's another remark here, and this is one that we do need to take note of, because this verb is one of the most common verbs in the New Testament, and that's oida, to know. And the verb oida, did you have another question? I'm sorry.
Only a little one.
Okay, go ahead.
Concerning the pluperfect first person singular,
mm-hmm.
How much of a chance is that it confused that with
infinitive?
Infinitive?
Yeah, there is a good chance. I suppose it's a good one. It depends, though, on the verb. It all depends on the verb. You're probably not going to run into any problem if the reduplication is clear. In other words, if the verb has a good, clear, reduplicated syllable, then that'll probably solve it for you. If it doesn't, then you're going to have to look at the context and so forth. In other words, the context will usually resolve it there. If it's just a finite verb form, you know, you'll have a clearly stated subject and that kind of thing, and it won't have the kind of construction that's usually indicative of an infinitive. So you may have to go by context there. And then short of that, of course, you just have to look it up. But usually I would think the context would be sufficient to tell you. And that's the kind of situation where a person who knows how to look up a Greek word in the lexicon but doesn't know anything about grammar can have some problems sometimes. He may look up the form and go back there and find out it's either infinitive or this, and he doesn't know what to do with it from there, because you'd have to look at the grammar to tell the difference.
It appears that in the infinitive, the accent is going to be...
Yeah, the accent usually gets drawn to the end. You get the circumflex in the end. That's another thing you can watch for. And of course, the accents weren't in the original. You can get to that whole nasty thing again, but still, it'll help you as far as the text that you have is concerned. But I think the bottom line would be context. It's hard to imagine the context in which you could, you know, validly have both possibilities. It would have to be maybe in a poetic passage or something that's really shortened down or something like that. Yes?
It's a little bit off the subject, but remember we had the question about accents in the minuscules and unminuscules.
Yes. Did you?
He said he's pretty sure that the later unminuscules.
Uh-huh.
Accent.
Okay.
And minuscules dead.
Okay. Minuscules all dead, and he said the later uncials dead. Okay, that's interesting. That's good to know. Okay. Good. There was another question, too. I don't know if I ever got a chance to tell you about it. Remember the question came up a while ago while we're dealing with this before I go on about crino in the future and how those future forms were made. Let me see if I can just refer back to it. I checked on it, so... But what I told you before is correct, but I wanted just to confirm it. Remember on page 281, we're dealing with verbs with liquid or nasal futures. And we were looking at crino, and they only give you part of the paradigm. Crino, crinase, crine, and so they got crino, crinase, crinase, and they're building it by putting an epsilon in there before the ending and have contract. That does hold out for the rest of the paradigm. In other words, that's the way they are made. So for your the rest of your forms, would have been crinumen. In other words, they give you the first person, second person, third person singulars. The plurals would have been crinumen, omicron upsilon, mu epsilon nu, which would be the proper contraction for the epsilon plus omicron. And then crinata, epsilon iota, tau epsilon, crinata, excuse me, and there'd be a circumflex over the epsilon iota in that one. And then crinusi, omicron upsilon, sigma iota, with optional nu. Crinusi, crinusin. And so it is a contract type of situation there. Okay, so that question came up, and that'll resolve that. Okay, good. Now, going back here on oida, was there any other little question before we talk about oida here? Yeah, did you have something?
There aren't any, I can see any.
Pluperfect? Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah, no participles or infinitives. Did he mention anything about infinitives?
No.
Okay. If there's no participles, I would be surprised if there's infinitives. you can find that easily or not, but that's okay. Okay, oida. The verb oida deserves special attention. It has only perfect and pluperfect forms, but these are used to express simple present and past meanings. Now, this one's kind of crazy in that respect. You've got pluperfect forms and perfect forms, and if you look it up in the dictionary, they put it under this perfect form, oida. It doesn't have any present forms. But they're getting a present meaning. To say I know, we'd say oida. And there is some logic behind this, though. It's not quite as illogical as it may seem, because when we look in the idea of the perfect, it's an action that took place in the past that has a present result. Now, when you know something, the reason that you know it is that something took place in the past where you came into the knowledge of that thing, and now you are continually abiding with the result of that knowledge. So you say you know. You know because you learned it at one time, and you still know. You still are retaining it. So that's the idea that they're trying to convey. And so it's not quite as illogical as it may seem. It just means in English we're translating it by a present, but their idea is that you presently have a result of a previous action. So oida, and now of course the form for oida is a perfect form, although you might not guess it to look at it. In other words, just to see oida and to see the paradigm, unless you saw the third person form, you might think that it was just an aorist form of something. But there's no augment or anything either, so who knows what the stem was, you know? Anybody's guess, I suppose. There is a subjunctive form over here, too, and that may indicate that the present was something like ado or something, because the subjunctive is ado. So if there isn't a present, it's kind of hard to say what it was, but that's something along those lines for him.
But you're only calling it a perfect by virtue of the fact that you're using the perfect endings and nothing else.
Yeah, there's nothing else you can go by. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're using perfect endings, and then the fact that the pluperfect forms have the endings are clearly pluperfect, nothing else. That pretty much, you know, nails it down. But as far as reduplication and so forth, who knows what it was? You know, all you have is a vowel to start with, and the delta is about the only thing that's tying the word together. So it is a very important verb. The form should be committed to memory. It's a very important verb. So oida, oidas, oida, oidam, oidamen, oidate, oidasi. The past, which is the pluperfect form, so if you want to say I knew, then it's eidain, eides, eide, eidamen, eidete, eidesan. Future, the only form of the future is in the New Testament is eideso, and it's first person singular. I will know. And subjunctive, eido, eides, eide, eidamen, eidete, eidosi. Nothing really irregular about that, as long as you consider the stem as epsilon iota delta. Imperative, we've got the only form we'll find is iste, and that one can be confused, of course. To look at it, you may think it's part of the verb to be or something. In other words, you would never guess that comes from oida. Infinitive, eidenai, and at least that ending seems fairly regular. Participle, eidos, eiduia, eidos. Again, the ones that seem to be regular seem to have a base, epsilon iota delta, so that may be, you know, what you might consider the basis, but the rest of it. And then maybe take that as a reduplication of that has come up with oi. Something like that maybe would help. But the reduplication is different in the perfect and the pluperfect form, so maybe rationalize that there's an augment stuck in there or something, too. Okay, remark three. Question?
I'm just wondering how would you, or maybe this isn't even really something to do, but I'm wondering how you put the middle pathem on like oida. I guess it'd be using that chart there with the delta and the.
You're asking to put how to make a middle and passive form out of these?
Yeah.
Apparently, they don't have the forms. In other words, it's not even mentioned here. The verb may not be used that way. In other words, that would be saying he was known or I was known or something like that. And that would probably be done either one of two ways. If you wanted to use this idea, they'd probably use a verb to be in a participle or something like that. Or more likely, a different verb is used. You know, the you know,